It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In response to recent events across the country, as well as right here in Pittsburgh, many have been engaging in conversations about race. Often race is examined through the sociological or political lens. However, many argue that poetry and the arts can provide fresh insights. Monday, as part of the University of Pittsburgh's Year of the Humanities, six acclaimed African-American poets will read their works and take part in a panel discussion on how to explore race through the written word. Poets Terrence Hayes and Toy Derricotte join us in studio. Terrence Hayes is a Pitt English professor and MacArthur Fellow. Terrence Hayes, good to have you with us.
Great to be here, Paul.
And Toy Derricotte is also a Pitt professor and co-founder of the Kaveh Kanem Foundation, a summer workshop for African-American poets. Toy, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks so much.
And you can join the conversation with a comment or question of your own at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email esspgh at wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. I'll throw this first question out to either of you. What is it about poetry that can start a different kind of conversation about race?
It's language. I mean, when you think about how people communicate, how people talk to one another beyond basic body language, it seems to me that poetry is the venue to begin these kinds of conversations, new sorts of expressions. I don't know what other form could do it.
Toy, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm thinking, too, that poetry is about personal experience for many people. And uncovering the roots of personal experience is the same for all people. It's not just about race. It's about expressing your own viewpoint about your history, your feelings. And this is universal.
If we all understood maybe more about each other's stories, each other's personal history, would that maybe help us find common ground in a more effective way than we seem to be finding that common ground as it is?
When I teach, you know, my students will show up and they come in thinking, first thought, best thought, which is what Ginsberg and the Beat sort of advocated for. But for me, one of the most important things about making art is revision, which is to re-see it both as you thought you saw it before, because maybe you saw it that first time and had one idea, and then you see it again. But implicit in revision is empathy, to try to see it as other people see it. So for me, the process of writing and making art is inherently empathetic. If you believe in reinvestigating what you thought originally, what you thought the first time. So I think that practice is directly related to improving relationships with people.
How hard is it, though, for us to reinvestigate our thoughts? We seem to arrive at an idea sometimes, and we get so stuck on that we can't see it from any other perspective.
There's got to be the love of art and beauty. And Keats said, truth is beauty and beauty is truth. And getting down to what is human is what the purpose of art. And I say writing one poem changes your life. And I've really found this to be true, because in poetry, there's a way in which the defenses that are common to all of us enable us to see again and in a new way. And this makes our lives richer and more complex and happier, I think.
And is there something about poetry that can turn an issue or something that we're grappling with, just sort of kind of turn it on its head or turn it inside out and make us look at it differently, just because of the nature of what poetry is, that sort of kaleidoscopic lens that it creates for us?
So here's the thing about race, and in particular about blackness, is so that if we said, let's have a conversation about race and poetry and invite six black poets, walking down the street, you would think that that's pretty uniform, that's pretty universal. But in fact, these six poets that are going to come on Monday are as diverse of any group of six poets, you know, people from New Orleans, Chicago, Detroit, Maine. There's is he a practicing Buddhist? I don't, you know, a gardener, when I think about Ross Gay. They just cover all kinds of backgrounds, aesthetics, poetics, personality, generation. So it's very clear that you can put a notion of the poet on the stage, and just by virtue of diversity, begin a new conversation. And so that's really what I'm hoping will happen here, to say, like, this is not what you're expecting when you think about something as narrow as, you know, what is race? What is blackness? What is poetry? All of those things are going to be challenged, I think.
And I'm hoping people will come out to the workshop on Sunday at the Kelly Strayhorn, which is called Race, Trauma, and Poetry. And trauma is the same no matter what the cause is. Mm-hmm. And there is trauma that happens on a personal level, on a larger social level, gender, sexuality, familial. And so hopefully people will come out, they'll have a chance to write there and talk about their experience. And making that connection is part of the human connection that I'd like to see mm-hmm. happen.
And that's on Sunday is the workshop.
It begins at 5. I think it goes from about 5 to 6:30, which again is just the suggestion in that gesture, is that this is not it's not just a Pitt conversation, even though Pitt is certainly one of the drivers of this conversation. But we are reaching out into the community. We're bringing everyone to the table, everyone that's interested in having this conversation, and even writing a little bit. It's an interactive workshop. So I think the kinds of vulnerabilities and insights that writers have, we want, you know, everyone, even people who aren't practicing writers but are interested in this conversation, they should certainly show up on Sunday to partake.
Is there something cathartic and therefore cleansing about writing that sort of creates the ability for somebody to look at something, in this case, the issue of race, in a very fresh way?
Yes.
Yeah, it's cleansing because I sweat. I mean, it's hard. It's as cathartic as
you literally
a
sweat
marathon.
When
yeah, I mean, I find it to be very challenging, but it's because the subjects are, whether it's personal trauma, whether it's historical trauma, whether it's personal joy, historical joy, pride, all of the emotions that sort of come when you're trying to put that on the page, I find that to be work, lots of work.
It's hard work.
Yeah.
Hard
well, there's
work.
There's a saying, isn't there, that I am glad. I hate writing, but I'm glad to have written.
Yes.
Not sure. Yeah,
yes.
That's about right.
Red Smith, there's nothing to writing. All you have to do is sit down and open up a vein.
That's right.
Yeah. It is. It is hard. It's hard to do important, great work, but it's also about personal growth. I find that writing about the things that are hard for me to write about and creating art is a way to make my journey a spiritual one. I am changing as a person, and I'm doing things for other people that I could not do without the writing that I've done.
And thinking is messy. I mean, the current conversation in my house, and it's probably going on in a lot of houses, is like, you know, the phenomena of Trump. So the conversation I've had with my wife is like, well, is he insecure? And does that make him more empathetic if we think that he's driven by a kind of insecurity? And then that gets to other kinds of, like, you know, power dynamics. Where does power, where does destruction come from? Where does vanity come from? But at the end of those conversations, I always feel like, you know, the only way to talk about this really is to make it into something, to make it into language, and then see what I believe when I'm pushing words around the page. But that's, you know, that's a moment that we're all living in. And so what I would suggest is that everyone has those kinds of questions, like, who is this guy? But if you dismiss them, you don't get to make art. You've made your mind up. There's no reason to explore them. But with everything, if you have other questions on top of questions, I think that always leads to art.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are viewing Donald Trump as some sort of Shakespearean character, and the fear is that there's some sort of Shakespearean tragedy waiting
sure.
for us down the road.
Sure, yeah. I just find, and this is whatever we're talking about, I find the big questions usually make me want to make something. Not make a decision, not even necessarily find an answer all the time, but to make it a kind of material that I can play around with. So he's a kind of Plato. You turn him this way, you turn him that way, and you're looking for the angles that, as I said earlier, ultimately lead to empathy, which is how we get back to why, you know, Monday becomes important and Sunday becomes important, because we are practicing empathy. I mean, I think that's a large part of the art making process.
And I'll mention the date again for the event. And again, it's the Center for African American Poetry and Poetics, Poetry Readings, a Moderated Discussion. This is the Monday event. Three generations of award-winning black authors from the Pitt Poetry Series, and the event is scheduled for Monday, March 21st at 7 p.m. at the Frick Auditorium in Oakland on the University of Pittsburgh campus. The preceding day will be the workshop. And the generations, I wanted to ask you both about this, the fact that there are different generations of poets participating in this discussion. How important is it to have those different time platforms that people are working from involved in this discussion?
Well, for me, I'm the co-founder of an organization of African-American poets that called Cave Canem. We're 20 years old right now. This is our anniversary. We're a national organization with 400 poets all over the country who are graduates of the program. We have an office in New York. And this year, the Cave Canem Fellows, Terrence, the awards that we won this year, the National Book Award, the Pulitzer, and...
Well, we lay claim to Ross Gay, who just won the National Book Critics Circle Award. He's on the Pitt Press. In the fall, the National Book Award winner, Robin Cost Lewis, was a Cave Canem Fellow. And the last Pulitzer, Greg Partlow, who's also going to be in town next week reading at the Carnegie Library Lecture Series, is also a Cave Canem Fellow. So I don't think it's a coincidence that the work that Toy really has made possible has yielded so many accomplishments, so many breakthroughs for poets everywhere, essentially, but certainly for Black poets in the last 20 years.
And this has been a tremendous time of excitement among these fellows who, for the first time in history, really, a group of African-American poets can sit down and have a dialogue. And great poetry comes from great dialogue. Yeah. Well, 25 years ago, when I was a student at graduate student at NYU, I had never read a Black poet in school. I had never studied with another Black poet.
How many years?
This
ago?
Was 1984. I graduated from NYU.
That's incredible.
Yes, it wasn't possible to read the books that I can now take down from my shelves and read and be a part of a conversation about American history. So things have changed remarkably.
And yet, to go to your generational question, in a workshop, in a Cave Canem workshop, this is true from the beginning. I can remember the youngest poet in the room being about 18 and the oldest poet being 80, Carrie Mae McCrae, who was from South Carolina. So these are people sitting around the table talking about work, you know, exposing themselves. There might be a spoken word poet with a formalist poet, a haiku poet with a experimental poet. They're all at the table. And so that gesture, which seems to be just about craft, is really, again, about diversity. It's about different viewpoints. And, well, what does the haiku poet think about the sonnet poet? And what does the experimental poet think about the spoken word poet? And how can they bridge those gaps and make something new out of those conversations?
Do you ever wonder how much of a link there is between, or this just occurred to me that, you know, haiku is sort of working within a limited format. It's almost like Twitter, isn't it? You know, it's that sort of abbreviated, abrupt expression.
I call it anti-social media. So, you know, I'm not on that. I'm not on that Twitter, man. But I think that's a pretty interesting point, and I'm sure the Twitter poems are everywhere being written right now.
Yes, ubiquitous. I wanted to ask both of you, we don't have to do it right now because I have some more questions for you, but if there's a piece, a particularly a profound piece that would add to the depth of this discussion before we wrap up, maybe have each of you. Terrence is going for this iPad.
Uh-huh. It's not going to be my poem, though. I just have the work
it doesn't of the have to be. Doesn't have to. We don't have to limit it to that. And Toy, you know, you can.
I don't have my iPad with me.
Oh no. Well, think about something, and we'll circle back to you before we wrap this up. What do you hope is the conversation that comes out of Monday's event?
I'm hoping to see, to look at the audience, get an idea who's going to be there. And I'm just hoping that whoever comes will take away something new and exciting that they can make a part of their own lives and add to their own conversation in some way, whether it's about poetry or life or politics. I'm very open to whatever comes for each person that's there.
And what are or who are some of the poets and what have they been writing about in terms of the events of today and the current racial climate. It doesn't have to necessarily be people that are showing up on Monday, but who is sort of getting at the crux of the matter here?
I mean, I think if you are, this would be, if you're a woman and you leave the house, you're always going to be confronted with your womanness on the street, and you have your subject, you have your attention. And certainly if you are an African-American, and then we could say if you're an African-American male, and then we could say if you're an African-American male living in the city under 30 years old, I mean, there's all kinds of ways that that gets deeper and deeper based on the adjectives you add to that essence, the essential quality of when I walk out of the street, you know, when I walk out of my home, what does the world bring to me? So that's to say, I think everyone is really writing about these issues because these are essential human issues. How does one human interact with another? And of course, that gets complicated when you say, well, if you think you're a human interacting with a human, but it so happens that the other human does not think you're a human, you get into these kinds of questions. So what I guess I'm saying is, like, at the core of it is just a question, almost an existential question about what does it mean to be in the world? And what's great, I mean, it's a tragedy, but what's great about blackness is that it's a very real, very tangible manifestation of that kind of question of what am I in the world? What am I next to other people? I think similarly about gender. So for me, just to put six poets on the stage and that are black and yet so incredibly different is a tremendous display of what diversity is and the myriad ways that people handle that basic question of who am I in the world?
And one of the things, too, is that if you're writing, as I have been writing, about personal trauma in my family, for example, this was really not done at a certain point in our history as writers, because we were supposed to write about the big subject of race, you know, racism, slavery. And to be a personal poet was kind of against the rule.
Which is surprising, because that all contributes to the big...
Well, you weren't supposed to put dirty laundry in the street. So if you were talking about your personal experience in your own home, in some ways, this was working against the vision of what an African person is, where we had to portray this idea that we were perfect, that our families were perfect. And that was a way of overcoming the negative stereotype that already existed because of, you know, hundreds of years of racism in our country. And so to talk about personal trauma was not allowed. And in fact, at one time you had to choose, are you a black poet? So, or are you a poet? In other words, are you writing about race or are you not writing about race, which could get you in trouble no matter which side you fell on. And now that is not true. You can explore whatever you need to explore to write the poetry that you need to write. And this has freed lot of us.
That has to be tremendously free.
Yes, it does. It is.
Well, I wanted to end with some verse, and I'm completely putting you guys on the spot because you know, you were not asked to bring anything, and just being in the moment, I was inspired to ask. So whatever you're comfortable with, this will be the note on which we end today.
This is a challenge because I have I'm torn between the youngest poet, Ricky Laurentiis, who just won the Cave Canem Book Prize and is published on Pitt, and the oldest poet, Afar, who also is on the press and just won also a major book prize. But the challenge for me is to say, well, a regular poem or a poem that goes right to our subject. I've chosen a shorter poem, and I'm going to go with Afar, and it's called Passing Through Indian Territory. Okay. And that space between this poem and our conversation, I will leave to the readers to ask. How does that relate to what we're going to be doing?
Great.
Passing through Indian territory. On horseback, I tell them to imagine me on horseback, going back to Boston, an oversized wool overcoat on top of layers of things that make themselves warm against me. Old tops of boxes of pictures of horses pressed flat to mesh and weave like cloth. I tell them it might take me a few months to get home because I like to stop when I travel, pull over so I can rest, And what about falling asleep on the horse? What about what I did not imagine? Smokestack man slumped down, snoring in a saddle, sliding over to the edge of the grace of horses, their mercy, forgiveness, even for people who forgot how the lines between territories are made of the flesh of ghosts who had no words for where land ends or where land begins, or why there is a horse waiting for me to answer for the uncle who killed her. Do I need to talk about it? Forgiveness, even for people who forgot. You know, there's all kinds of moments inside the poem, which, again, is a poem about what he said, forgiveness, lines of territory, what's forgotten, what should be remembered, the challenge of riding on a horse, moving while also being asleep. I mean, that is the challenge that we're presented with sometimes when we think about how do we go forward on this other kind of animal, the animal of race, and when are we asleep and when are we not? When should we make it go where we want it to go, and when should we let it go where it wants to go?
That was a great choice, Terrence. Thank you. Thank you so much. I think it was a great note. Unless you want to add something, Toy?
No, I'm fine. I really enjoyed it.
That was wonderful. What a wonderful moment. I want to thank both of our guests for being here, Terrence Hayes, Pitt English Professor, MacArthur Fellow, and Toy Derricotte, Pitt Professor, co-founder of the Cave Canem Foundation. And again, the workshop coming up on Monday, March 21st at 7 o'clock, or I should say the poetry, three generations of award-winning Black authors from the Pitt Poetry Series, joining the discussion on Monday, March 21st at 7 p.m. at the Frick Auditorium. The workshop is the day before. And the time again on that, Toy?
5.
5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Have we covered everything? I think we have.
It's great.
It's been great.
Thank you so much again, Terrence Hayes, Toy Derricotte, for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having us, Paul.
Coming up, a discussion about possible remedies for the mass incarceration problem in the U.S. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.